present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome once again to the News Quiz. We start with a listing from Hot Tickets, read by Charlotte Green.
J.J. Murphy's Decent Ales and Irish Food, freshly prepared by our chef, Mohammed.
Thanks to Mrs. Susan Wolfe of Harrow for sending us that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Roy Hattersley. Challenging them on my left, Jeremy Hardy and the author of Not Alan Clark's Diary, Peter Bradshaw. And before we start round one, here's a piece from the Washington Post.
Cemetery lots, National Memorial Cemetery, upper and lower crypts in Court of Christ, have moved.
Thank you, Alan Harper from Edinburgh, for spotting that. Francis, your first question. Who doesn't want us to moan at his zones?
Aha, it's the dome.
It is.
We're all domed. And they had a launch of the dome. And it's Blair says we mustn't snipe or carp. And he then explained what's in it. And, I mean, you have to snipe and carp. It's a ridiculous outfit there. There's going to be some gigantic androgynous figure where you go in through the back and inspect its intestines and then climb out through the left eyeball. And you're then whisked into some sort of virtual reality reproduction of an English seaside, complete with raw, untreated sewage and that sort of thing.
In fact, the figure isn't androgynous. The figure's a naked woman. And the entire thing is called the Millennium Experience, apart from Peter Mandelson, for whom it's a new experience.
I think it's rather disturbing, this thing. I don't agree with Roy. I think it is a man, but it's the designer has clearly been influenced by his favourite childhood toy, i.e. Action Man. It has no genitals.
And then next to it, there's going to be a 75-foot baby.
Yes.
Or William Hague, as I think it's called.
Peter Mandelson has rubbished reports that corporate sponsors have been slow in coming forward. The Dreamscape Zone, for example, features giant beds capable of accommodating 16 people at one time, and that's already been snapped up by Stringfellows. 2 points to Francis. Roy, who's for coffee?
Coffee.
Oh, coal. It's a pun. It's a pun. It's the United Nations Director General, or General Secretary, or Secretary General, and he's had an immense triumph in re-establishing the United Nations as a real entity in the world, and quite right too, but the President of the United States won't like it.
I hope we're not going to have this war, because if Britain does attack Iraq, then surely we'll have to be kicked out of the Northern Ireland peace process for breaking our ceasefire, won't we?
UN inspectors will now be allowed free access to Saddam's many palaces. The Iraqi leader lives a lifestyle of such opulence and such grandeur, it can only be a matter of time before he becomes the new Lord Chancellor. 2 points to Roy. Peter, who's walking to London to keep walkers off the beaten track?
Oh, yes. This is the, if I'm not very much mistaken, the Countryside March on Sunday. There are lighting beacons and torches all around the country in support of the Countryside March.
Clearly, these people have no understanding of our urban ways. Mark, traipsing through the town like this with no respect.
That's right, absolutely right.
And I mean, because we're politically aware, we know how to demonstrate and go on marches, and they just come marching into town, shouting out their slogans like, squeal like a hog, city boy, and we're all related, and things like that. And the government just gives it to them immediately,
right.
And it happens every year now.
I think we should have a city dwellers march. I think all of us city dwellers should march into the country and wobbling around in our kind of stilettos.
Well, that's what they were trying to have. That was what was known as the right to roam, but it doesn't work the other way around. They can come and roam all over London, but they've abandoned the legal right to roam. They were going to introduce one. But Tony Blair got an assurance from the country landowners that they would do the decent thing. I don't understand why Blair's doing this. I mean, you only have to listen to his speeches to see he's very keen on rambling, but he's betrayed them. He's let them down badly, and poor old Michael Meacher had to apologise to the House.
I think we should demand access to farmland to inspect their dangerous chemicals. No, don't bother to clap, really. My heart wasn't in it.
Jeremy, a piece of music for you. Jeremy, who's been accused of the mother of all U-turns?
Oh, this is Harriet Harman and the lovely Frank Field, whose job is to think the unthinkable, which is pretty pointless. He just sits around all day thinking, I might eat an armadillo today. But and that's about the level of what he comes up with. But no, they what Labour's done, Harriet Harman's confounded her critics by bringing in welfare reforms which are so completely incomprehensible that no one can decide whether they're for or against them. Because what they did last year was to, rather than tell people it's all right, we'll give the money back, they didn't say that, which was to lure the campaign group of Labour MPs into the open. So it's all a bit strange.
It's all very dangerous talk, because if these public attacks on Harriet Harman go on, she won't get sacked.
That's why she's doing it. She and Gordon Brown are just trying to suck up to loony lefties like my Lord Hattersley here.
I hadn't noticed them doing that. I'm glad you brought it to my attention. It's the news that families on low incomes will recoup most of the money they lost in December's controversial benefit shake-up. Government's at pains to stress that the cuts aren't actually being abandoned, so it's wrong to call it a U-turn. It's more a kind of Q-turn in which the government goes round in a circle and then disappears off its own backside. And the scores at the end of round one are Francis and Roy 4, but Jeremy and Peter with 4.2. And we start round two with an item spotted in the Yorkshire for sale paper sent in by Gordon Clemens.
New all-leather English shoes, size 9.5. One black, one brown.
Francis, how is gender on the royal agenda?
Roy is writing Harriet here. No, that was the last question.
I'm against her becoming queen myself.
Is this to do with Geoffrey Archer again? He's about once a month now. Geoffrey Archer, he became a bus conductor this week to get himself in the papers. And when he's not being a bus conductor, he's introducing bills in the House of Lords to end the system whereby it's the oldest son of the monarch who becomes the next monarch, unless there are no sons, in which case they have to give it to a girl. But she can't belong to the MCC, on the other hand. He wants to have sexual equality in the royal family.
Pointless having sexual equality. How can you have justice in the royal family? The whole thing is meant to be archaic. It's based on the most completely unjustifiable principles of heredity and privilege. And you can't bring equal opportunities into it. It's like saying gang bosses should be elected.
This is Lord Archer's primogeniture bill aimed at giving females the same right of succession to the throne as men. Government has also decided to back the bill, so it may make considerable parliamentary progress, which would certainly be the first time anything written by Lord Archer has been given a second reading. Roy, why is brown the new green?
This is the decision by that great man, John Prescott, that fewer houses shall be built on new, open, untouched land, and more houses shall be built in the cities. And this is a thoroughly good thing, because it gives us more opportunity to roam, if we're given the right to roam, which we won't be, because, as Francis said, the Labour Party has gone back and it promised that we would be. It's a rather circular point, but it's a good one.
Right. The question concerned a government policy shift in favour of brownfield sites. The government says it hopes to encourage developments on inner-city sites that have fallen hopelessly into disrepair, such as abandoned steelworks, landfill sites and conservative clubs. The Tories say they were the first to promote city living at these brownfield sites. Under Mrs. Thatcher alone, we saw the creation of many dwellings underneath the bridge at Waterloo, outside the Arndale Centre in Manchester, and by the railway station in Glasgow. So, 2 points there. And Peter, here's a piece of music for you. Cunning choice of music there, Peter. It was called Airport by The Motors. Peter, who slipped up on a disc?
William Hague, the very strange-looking leader of the Conservative Party, was using his wife's Range Rover, and it was discovered that her tax disc was out of date, and there were other irregularities. It's very worrying that the leader of the Party of Law and Order should be caught flouting the law in this disgusting way. I think he should resign. It's very, very worrying for all concerned. Also, that he's driving such a naff motor car.
But also, he's not going to be charged. The Durham police issued the most extraordinary statement saying it was quite understandable that Fionn had neglected to renew her tax disc in view of all the experiences she'd had over the last few months, traumatic experiences, i.e. marrying old Haig.
I think it's terrible for him. It's the first girl he's ever been out with, and she turns out to be a criminal. Maybe he likes it. Maybe it turns him on. Maybe they're like Bonnie and Clyde going around. Natural-born killers, the pair of them.
She can't spell. The way she spells her first name.
I know. It's Brian, really.
The story concerned William Haig's car, which was stolen at an airport and later found to have an expired tax disc. Witnesses say the joyriders who stole it had difficulty at first in controlling the Tory leader's car, as apparently it kept shifting suddenly to the right and then throwing itself in reverse. 2 points to Peter. Jeremy, which small ad was judiciously placed?
Oh, this is the advert for judges, placed, I think, in the Times by Lord Irvin. They're now advertising for judges, and it says it's an equal opportunities post. You can be appointed regardless of sex, sexual orientation, race or religion, just so long as you're a gagging looper. but then the weird thing is, you send in the application and then it all just goes a bit weird, because then he just starts appointing his own people and it's all a bit covert, and you go and see him privately and butter him up, bring him something nice for the house, probably. He likes that sort of thing. But they've made a lot of giant strides with the judiciary, because I was reading the paper the other day that the thing, there has been progress, because in 1987, 70% of senior judges were from a public school background, but by 1997, the number had fallen to 82%.
Yes, the first ever advertisements for High Court judges were placed in the newspapers and magazines, ending centuries of secrecy surrounding their appointment. For years, judges have been seen as out of touch and overprivileged. One resigned recently after admitting he didn't know who Paul Gascoigne was and had never heard a record by Oasis, which I call truly privileged. One judge is so worried about appearing out of date that he carries a dictionary with him all the time so he can be sure what modern expressions mean. At least we assume that's what he meant when he said he was looking up a rent boy in his chambers. The scores at the end of round two are Francis and Roy 8, Jeremy and Peter 8 points. Start round three with this caption from the Daily Mail's map of the Millennium Dome.
Toilet teepees, 24 60-foot high conical towers. Each toilet has motion sensitive taps.
Thanks to Noel Withers of Hampshire for that. Francis, whose assets might be an asset to tourism?
Belinda Messenger.
Yes.
Has been taken on by the British Tourist Authority, I think, to sell Britain abroad. New Britain, New Labour, all that. And there's the most nauseating thing, and they're putting out leaflets abroad with pictures of her saying, come to Britain, it's got big boobs and it's blonde and it's Blairite.
I don't see what it's got to do with Britain. They're silicon, they're not Cotswold stone or something.
The story concerned Melinda Messenger's appearance in the latest British Tourist Authority guide. Her picture appears beside the catchy slogan, the blonder the barnet, the bigger the boobs, the better the babe. It certainly put us all in the mood for tourism, so that's why we're flying out to Sweden right after the show. Many people accuse the guide of giving out wrong messages. How would Melinda's plunging cleavage attract tourists to Britain when everyone knows that Silicon Valley is in California? Roy, here's your piece of music. Roy, which House of Lords still welcomes John Major but not Baroness Thatcher?
Oh, this is the MCC, who decided earlier this week that they weren't going to have women members. In fact, they decided they were, but they didn't decide by a bigger majority to overcome the constitutional necessity to have a two-thirds majority. And the president of the MCC appeared next day on television and said, we'll have to wait until a lot of the old fogies die off, which seemed to be one of the most sensible things the president of the MCC had said in the last 150 years.
But it wasn't that they didn't do this because they're anti-women. It's quite the opposite. They were doing it to protect women. Because the long room at Lord's, if you've ever been there, has sights that women just shouldn't be exposed to, I think. No one should be exposed to, really. There were old Harrovians and chartered accountants from Esher and Geoffrey Archer. Especially after lunch, it's just not a place to go to anyway. They only have gents' lavatories around the long room. And I did actually once bump into John Major in a gents' lavatory at Lord's. And I wouldn't wish that on any woman.
Peter, who was shaken when not sirred?
Yes, indeed, yes. Much money, perhaps. I'm rather pleased with this impression, and certainly. Anybody know who it is? No. How about George Lazenby, correct. Yes, this is the great Scottish nationalist, now a permanent resident in Marbella, Mr. Sean Connery, who was not allowed to have a knighthood, allegedly because he was quoted as saying in a Playboy interview of some 20 years ago that he favoured hitting women, either that or because he was too stridently in favour of Scottish nationalism, a political view which the current government now finds inconvenient, or it was for his wig in Never Say Never Again.
You couldn't knight him. He'd be kneeling before the Queen saying, that sword touches my ear, I'll smash your fist in.
You can't have any old riffraff getting these knighthoods and peerages, can you?
No, I know. The honest thing. Well, you made my point exactly. I think already it's been debased by letting some working-class people into the various orders of chivalry. And the idea that a Scotsman might be included seems to me to be totally intolerable. Particularly one who never comes to Britain except when the taxman allows him to do so.
He's a great Scottish patriot, though, because he always holds on to his accent, no matter what the nationality of the character he's based on.
It's as crazy an idea as Rupert Murdoch becoming a papal knight, isn't it?
One celebrity who was knighted this week was Elton John. The Queen was reportedly delighted, and Her Majesty enjoyed meeting Sir Elton as well. 2 points for Peter. Jeremy, who was in a class of his own?
Oh, this was a lad who was in a class of his own. When teachers are incompetent and broken down and useless, they become Ofsted inspectors. And then they go around, wandering around schools, saying, oh, this school's no good. And then all the neurotic middle-class parents pull all their children out because it got a bad Ofsted report. And that's what happened at this school, and there's just this one lad. He'll probably do very well. I mean, you can't tell me the class sizes make no difference at all. You get a lot of one-on-one tutoring. You'll probably be a bit lonely, but he'll be all right. He'll just grow up to be like William Hague. Got no friends, but never really wanted any, probably, did he?
Yes, 5-year-old Richard Marlin's village school in Norfolk was reopened just for him. He posed patiently for photographs during playtime before running off for an exciting playground game of cops and cops. All the children left for a larger school nearby, but he wanted to return after complaining that he'd been picked on by his form mates. Now he thinks he's being victimised by his teacher, as when anyone misbehaves, she makes the whole class stay in. And the scores at the end of round 3 are Francis and Roy 12, Jeremy and Peter 12. Before we start the final round, here's a piece from the Marlborough Gazette and Herald sent in by Alan and Susan Elks.
A father of two snapped up a cut price vasectomy when it went under the auctioneer's hammer at a charity ball. It's a snip at half the price, saying he'd been thinking about having the operation and the ball came along just at the right time.
Francis, here's your piece of music. Francis, what's our most popular form of address?
Oh, this is some completely pointless, publicity-seeking, expensive exercise by the Halifax Building Society, and I have an account with them. Slightly resent my money being wasted on the completely ludicrous exercise. They just commissioned a vast survey to find out what were the most popular house names in the country. No pretense that this is going to help them in their business or sort out their forward planning or anything else. They just did it to get their name in the papers. And number one in the hit parade was The Cottage. Apparently, you often see the sign outside gents' lavatories in London. It's very, very, very popular indeed, The Cottage. And then all the others, I mean, they're all entirely predictable. It's all the old Rectory or the New Labour or something like that, or Done Roman, Done Right to Roman, that sort of stuff.
Yes, the Halifax Building Society shows that the most popular house name in Britain is indeed The Cottage. Number seven, surprisingly, was The White House, which suggests that an Englishman's home is where he has sex with his work experience student. Most of the popular names reflected a way of life which has long since vanished, so in years to come we can expect more houses called such things as Burglar's Haven and Ye Old Abandoned Korean Car Plant. Roy, who had a fashionable time with Fidel?
Oh, Fidel Castro has decided he's preparing for his funeral, he's anticipating his death, and he's thinking of his successor. And apart from that, I can't think of more to say about him, except that he's got a big beard, and his cigars can't be smoked in the United States of America, and he's a great deal better than the United States of America make him out to be.
I think
that's kind of right.
Supermodels.
Two supermodels went to see him.
That was for post-structuralists in the audience. Oh, no, that was the subtext of my answer. Yes. The subtext of my answer was supermodels.
Well, he had the Pope a couple of weeks ago, so he thought he wanted some people who dressed normally, so he invited Naomi Campbell and Kate Moss, or whatever she saw
really
that.
Nice.
Exactly.
He welcomed them, and he said, do you want something to eat? You must be starving. They said, no, it's all right, we're supposed to look like this. That was really good, because they're the ordinary girls. They're very beautiful, actually. They're both from my neck of the woods. One's from Stretton, one's from Thornton Heath. And they met up, and he said, I hear the shopping's very good, you know, in your part of the world. And they said, well, Croydon's all right, but you can't bloody park in Streatham anymore. You carriageway through and stuff. And he said, well, my problem is that we can't get anything in or out for the last 40 years because Americans are blockading us. And he said, well, maybe you could have a word with Bill Clinton. He said, oh, I'm not going near him, the price of our dresses.
He actually said, Fidel said that it was a very spiritual experience meeting Naomi Campbell. And he spent 90 minutes with her as well, the full 90 minutes, which is longer than he spent with the Pope.
Well, who would you choose?
I'll give 1 point to Roy for getting half of it right, and then a point each to Jeremy and to Francis. And that way we fiddle the scores. Thank you. Peter, which eggheads discovered it wasn't good to talk? Talk about intellectuals having a disagreement.
Is it Prof Hawking? Has discovered the secret of the universe, or claims he has, that it started life, the universe. Hard to believe, but it was once a little frozen pea, fresh as the day when the pod went pop or whatever, and then it did go pop. A split second later, there was the big bang, and then there were a lot of mushy peas, and that is the universe we now inhabit. But not everyone buys this idea that we live in a universe of expanding peas, but he says he's worked it all out.
Has he worked out where the pea came from in the first place?
No, that's the flaw in his theory.
Ah.
But there was a pea, but the pea only existed for a microsecond before the Big Bang. But where that came from, no one knows.
Yeah, obviously his telescope gives him a bird's eye view of the galaxies. I'll give Francis a point. This was Professor Stephen Hawking and the Russian physicist Andrei Lind who disagreed about the birth of the universe. Stephen Hawking's new theory claims we'll never reach the end of time, so obviously he's never been in a pub at 2 minutes past 11. Professor Linda, however, believes the universe is made up of an infinite number of Big Bangs, which he calls the Clinton theory. Jeremy, your last question. Where might one pick up a prostitute?
This is extraordinary. Penguins are available for prostitution, something which has been known by Falkland Islanders for a very long time. You can, with a little stone, you can pay a penguin to go to bed with you. I hesitate to mention this because the countryside march will be diverted now to Antarctica. It's quite strange that because they collect stones to make their nests, raise them up off the damp and keep the nests drier. And to get stones, they're on the game. But this is horrifying. I mean, I've seen Pingu, and his mother's a saint. The thought of it, just turns your stomach.
Yes, it's the startling news that female penguins indulge in a form of prostitution. Researchers found they had sex with males who weren't their regular mates in exchange for rocks and stones, which would help them build bigger and safer nests for their eggs. So, while the males get their rocks off, the females get their rocks off them. If, however, a female penguin waddles away with just a small pebble, it probably indicates a lesser transaction, such as wing relief. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
This is an advert from the DVLA, the Driver Vehicle Licensing Agency, flogging its DVLA registration hotline or some such nonsense, selling off number plates. Firstly, choose yourself a prefix letter. DVLA's JK, LM, NP and some A and H prefix select registrations begin at only £250, while R and B prefixes start from just £399. Some registrations are individually priced. Secondly, choose one of our special numbers to add to your prefix. With A, B and H prefixes, you have a choice of numbers 1 to 20, while JK, LM, NP and R prefixes also include any repeat numbers from 22 to 999, numbers ending in 0 from 30 to 90, and those ending in 100 from 100 to 900. Next, add any combination of three letters except I, Q and Z to form your special and unique registration. It couldn't be simpler.
Peter, this is from the Daily Telegraph. It's about the stupidest armed robber in Britain, Mr. Mark Cason of Pentreville in Cardiff, who's now serving 5 years for robbery. As Cardiff Crown Court heard, Cason raided a village post office near the city, but forgot to put on his balaclava and gloves. He then produced his own post office savings book with his name on it, and then left it behind. Wielding a fake gun, Cason demanded the keys to the safe, which he was unable to open without help. Carrying £9,500 in cash, he then couldn't get out of the post office and asked two children to open the door for him. They noted his car's registration. Stuck in traffic, Cason then took a train to Stockport, where he went to a hotel where he gave a false name, even though he was known there. He then... he then laid low and announced, "If the police ask for me, I'm not here."
Jeremy.
This is sent in by a man who calls himself Jeff Careless, and it says in brackets, as in careless. Stratford and Avon, and it's from the West Australian newspaper in Perth. It says, sadly, we also discovered some deeply disturbing crimes which our mates in blue have kept the public in the dark about. Police charged one offender with a heinous crime of cardinal knowledge, while a streetwalker was caught trying to solicit near a swelling.
Now let's look at the final scores. Jeremy and Peter have 17 points, and thanks to my totally failed attempt at fiddling the scores, Francis and Roy have tied with 17 points. And we leave you with a cutting from the dance section of Island Events magazine, sent in by Brian Vokes from London.
Tuesdays, Hilton Head Island Shag Club holds pre-registered, beginner, intermediate and advanced shag lessons. 6 to 9pm at Cheryl's Piano Bar and Cafe, with open shagging following.
That's all for this week. Till next week, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz this week were Francis Wheen, Roy Hattersley, Peter Bradshaw and Jeremy Hardy. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Hugh Rycroft with Tom Jameson and Dave Cohen. The producer was John Rolfe.